This is WSIU in Focus. I'm Jennifer Fuller. This year's SIU School of Law Lazar Distinguished Lecture focuses on housing. I talked with Juan Carlos Linares, who is the executive director of LUCHA, about housing as a human right.
When we talk about housing, we often talk about it from an economic framework, which is absolutely appropriate because it's become one of the economic drivers of our society and of our country. But what we don't always talk about is how the legal framework has really shaped the way our communities look today. And when we talk about it from a human rights perspective, we look at it from the perspective of what moral obligation do we have to house everyone in the one instance, but then also to bring communities together on the other side. So when I start off with housing as a human right, I look at the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which in part was led by, the drafting was led by Eleanor Roosevelt, the wife of former President Franklin Roosevelt. So we gave her the authority and that power to say we have a moral obligation to have housing as one of those important human rights, particularly in Article 25. Now, if we fast forward, we have what's called the federal, the Fair Housing Act of 1968. And this was a direct response to the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. on April 4th, 1968. So we bring that up because Lyndon Johnson at the time, who we, I think, acknowledge in history was a master political maneuverer, he took advantage of the fact that Martin Luther King was also rallying around housing rights and decent and affordable housing. So when we look at the human rights framework that Eleanor Roosevelt helped lead, and then we look at the Fair Housing Act, which says that we will not discriminate against people based on race and other factors, what we have then is a very deep and profound framework to bring our communities together. But what has happened is, and this is a reflection going back before those two, is our policy was, after the Great Depression, to say we're going to use housing as an economic driver. We have to. So the United States is going to, our government is going to guarantee mortgages. We now have companies called Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae that currently do that work. But when we did that, we put together maps that had these red lines around them. And those red lines, we call them red line maps now, and the situation is also called redlining, where African Americans and other ethnic communities were denied the privileges of those mortgages. So to bring it all up to date, the way our communities look today, particularly in big cities, but in all parts of the country, it's not just happenstance that we have segregated ourselves. And it's not just happenstance that we have grown wealth in our country, but that wealth has not benefited everyone. That really comes from that framework that we laid out as a nation by policy in the 1930s and have tried to remedy that through time, through our human rights frameworks and through our fair housing frameworks. So when we look at today, redlining is prohibited under that Fair Housing Act of 1968. But what we see today is communities are still segregated. And this is, again, a direct reflection of what has happened in the past. But the question becomes, how do we further remedy this? How do we improve ourselves as a nation and further integrate ourselves? And there's lots of frameworks available for that, that both we can put legislatively in place, but that also, and I argue, come from that moral grounding, is what do we want to look like as a society? How do we want to grow our economy together? And I'll just focus on a couple right now.
Sure.
So number one, what are other places doing, right? It's important for us not to look in a vacuum and just to look at our own histories and practices and just fall into that. I was privileged to receive a fellowship with the Chicago Community Trust, where I got to go around the world and see what were some of the best practices around the world in terms of its housing. And one of the places that I visited that really opened up my eyes was Singapore. In Singapore, for example, 82% of Singaporeans live in public housing, yet only 20% are poor. They have a very high per capita income. So, you know, you would think that most folks would want to go on the private market, but people want to live in public housing in Singapore. My point here is public housing does not have the same stigma in Singapore as it does here in the United States. Now, that comes to an observation that we have here with regards to home ownership versus renters. So when we talk about Section 8 subsidies or other government subsidies that go to renters, we do have a stigma here that when we're giving out these subsidies, or some will call it welfare, that they're going to people that don't deserve them, that they're going to gangbangers or drug dealers or folks that are otherwise, you know, taking advantage of government subsidies. When in reality, the largest set of subsidies or the largest set of welfare really goes to homeowners in this country. I am a homeowner. I'm one of the bigger welfare takers individually in this country, and I'm including myself with all homeowners. And the bigger the mortgage you have, the higher value mortgage you have, the more you can write off in your mortgage interest deduction. And that's really where that subsidy goes.
Juan Carlos Linares will give the Lazar Distinguished Lecture this evening at the SIU School of Law. I'm Jennifer Fuller.